A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today's June 24th, 2016, and today on the show, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. And our topic, we're going back to the workbook, you know, it's one of our favorite things to do, and we're going to look at lesson 185, I Want the Peace of God. And lesson 200, there is no peace except the peace of God. Now, if you have a copy of the workbook for A Course in Miracles, you might want to pull it out because then you could read along with us. So you might want to just go ahead and grab that and read along with us. And speaking of being along with us, you can also, while you're listening to the show today, you can meet me in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. And if you're new to the show today and you're going, what are you talking about, chat room? Well, you don't have to be there, but it's something that we do on Facebook, and so we can, you know, kind of interact during the show or after the show, that kind of thing, and I can, you know, post websites and that sort of thing. So the 1-2 Radio chat room, the easiest way to get there is to go to our website, which is 1-2radio.com. And on the left side of the page, click the chat button, and you'll be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And Scott Weaver, who is our producer, will be there to let you in. So go ahead and do that if you'd like to. And also, before we get started today, I have a very special announcement, because starting next week, Friday, July 1st, we are moving our time slot to 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 Eastern. Now, you might have noticed that we do have some new hosts coming on to 1-2 Radio, and we have some people that, you know, it's summertime, they're taking sabbaticals, or a few people are just kind of shaking up their schedules a little bit. So it has turned out that the two shows right after this one are on sabbatical, or they went into other time slots. And so we're trying to put that schedule, you know, tighten it right back up so that you'll have, you know, multiple hours of listening enjoyment. So we are going to go into that 10 a.m. Pacific slot. We'll see whether or not it's temporary or whether it's permanent, but in any case, that's the slot we're going to go into. So I hope that you can still meet me at that time every Friday. And if not, you know, you can always listen to this show as an encore on 1-2 Radio, or you can always download or just listen through our on-demand section on our website. So I will announce that again at the end of the show, hopefully, but I just wanted you to kind of mark your calendars, because I know there's some of you, you're just so incredibly faithful. You're here with me every Friday, and I so love that. So next week, we're going to be a little bit later, 10 a.m. Pacific, 2 hours later specifically. So let's get on with Susan Dugan. Now, I know many of you are familiar with her. You've read her books. She has 3 books on forgiveness. And if you're in the Denver area, maybe you know her personally, because she's a co-founder for the School for A Course in Miracles. And she also facilitates ACIM study groups, and including one that she does every Tuesday night. I mean, she is like incredibly devoted to that particular group. So I'm thrilled to always have Susan on the show, and to just, you know, I always wait to see what she wants to talk about. And of course, it's so timely. And when I heard these lessons, I thought, well, of course. I mean, I almost don't even have to ask her what brought these lessons into your mind, considering some of the events of the last few weeks. It has just seemed like, you know, if the illusion is ever just darn crazy, that's what it has been the last few weeks. So welcome, Susan. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sia. It's always fun to be talking with you.
Yeah. And like I said, in some ways, I don't even have to ask you what brought up these lessons on peace, but I know that something must have. I mean, you're always kind of, you know, on top of what lessons are really working in your life, or what thoughts. So do you want to just kind of dive in by telling us what you're thinking or what's going on for you?
Sure, I will do that. Well, you know, I think that these two lessons probably are always appropriate, like every single day, but in particular, I turned to these lessons actually a couple of weeks ago. I had gone to Seattle to visit my daughter, who moved there last year after she graduated from college. And I've mentioned her some other times. But so I was, you know, while I was there, it was a great visit. I was really looking forward to it. It was like I left on a Thursday and came back on a Monday. And, but she was, you know, she's working now, which is wonderful. She has a great job and she's very busy. And, you know, she's got a wonderful boyfriend that she's, together with. And so, you know, I got some alone time with her on Friday, and then we did some great hiking and some other, really fun things. But, you know, it just was sort of so she's been there like a full year. And last year at this time, I had gone out to help her and her boyfriend find an apartment and, you know, get kind of settled in Seattle and all of that. So it was kind of it occurred to me when I was going there that it was kind of a sort of the exact same time and sort of a celebration of them being there a year. But for me, it was also a dawning realization that she's not coming back anytime soon, you know, that she's going to settle. They're talking about renewing their lease and, you know, and staying there. And they love Seattle and they're, you know, they've got some great opportunities to get some really good career experience. And, you know, they're having a great time in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, I can see why they love it. It's a beautiful place. But I guess I had entertained these fantasies that it would be like, you know, she'd be back in 2 years. And so I had to sort of, you know, reconcile myself to that. And then I think this is part of any parent's journey. It was also really, you know, really embracing and celebrating, but also, you know, there's always two sides of it that you know, that she's really independent now. I mean, she doesn't, you know, and I mean, that's a wonderful thing. That's what we want our kids to do. But there is this sort of, you know, winsome quality to it where you're just, oh, you know, she's not my little baby anymore. You know, I mean, there's a deepening of that obvious awareness that's been going on for some time. And so I had, you know, I had a lot of mixed feelings about it. And I was really working with the course internally to look at that and to look at how, you know, the transformation that needs to happen within the parent-child relationship and how, you know, to look at my own sense of sort of neediness and loss, which the course asks us to do with our relationships, you know, and to see that, well, it's very, very normal, everything that I was experiencing, and the course isn't saying not to feel it, but to also see that, you know, it's what's going on really when we're feeling that sort of neediness or sense of loss is really what the course calls special love. And special love, which means, you know, it's we think it's between another body and that another person. I can be happy when I'm around this other person and you know, less so when I'm not. You know, that's really a way of, it's a substitute for the love of God that we all use. And it's bound to always have a sense of loss or fear associated with it, because nobody and nothing outside us can meet all our needs. And you know, it's not really kind to think that they can. So I was really working, you know, with bringing those feelings to Jesus internally. And so, as I said, it was sort of a bittersweet, you know, a going back and forth between my right and my wrong mind. Of feeling the real, you know, the joining with our one teacher and the happiness and the real love that is beyond the particular love that I feel for my daughter, that is what we really share, and then this sort of, you know, kind of at war with this special love. So that was all going on, and then and nonetheless, we had a great time, and you know, it was mostly a positive experience. But I was recognizing this also within, which is helpful. It's part of the undoing process to see that. But then while we were there, so I got there on Thursday. My father-in-law, we were going on a hike. My daughter and her boyfriend and their new little dog, who's adorable, and. We were on our way there. It's like a 2-hour drive outside of Seattle. And we got a call from my husband that my father-in-law died. Mm. And he had been in the hospital for a couple of days with pneumonia. But he had gotten out and he really didn't want to be in the hospital. And so, you know, it's really good that he got to go back to his place and all of that. But you know, he was declining. He was 94. I mean, it wasn't completely unexpected, but, you know, it also wasn't, when I left, I didn't realize the seriousness either of the situation, and neither did my husband. And so, you know, because there's no other family that we have out here, they're what, you know, I felt badly that I wasn't here and my husband had to kind of face this and deal with it all by himself. And so there was that kind of thing of the guilt that comes up from that, you know?
Right.
And then, and trying to sort of comfort him long distance. And, you know, I offered to fly back, but there really wasn't, it was sort of that day of, you know, kind of dealing with it. And then nothing could really happen until that Monday, which is when I was flying back anyway. So, you know, he's just like, no, you don't do that. So kind of that kind of put a little bit of a pale on it. We were very sad about it. And we had really got to know my father-in-law quite well in the 5 years since we had moved him from back east to out here to Denver. And he was, you know, he was a part of our, he only lived like 6 or 7 blocks from us in a retirement home, and we would have him over for every holiday and often for dinner. And so, you know, he was very much a part of our life. And so that went on. And then that, Sunday was the Orlando, crisis and shooting and horrible tragedy that went on. And, you know, that just was so difficult to, it's just such a horrible tragedy. And so there was a lot of turmoil going on that weekend and, on the collective and then also personally. And so, then I had to leave on Monday, and I started, I'm not that great a sleeper when I'm away anyway. And especially when I have to leave for a flight the next morning kind of thing. And so I started that night getting weather alerts on my phone, you know, about severe storms in Denver. And I'm not a good flyer. Anyone who's read my books or my blogs knows that one of my little phobias is, I mean, I fly. I don't let it cripple me to, you know, to not go places, but it's difficult. I turbulence really freaks me out. So I started getting these alerts, and you know, the severe thunderstorms and hail and damaging winds and stuff, you know, and they're all like about at the time that I'm going to be landing in Denver. And so, but you know, I'm thinking, well, if it's bad enough, they'll cancel the flight or whatever. And, but you know, they didn't, and we got on. So I was already like kind of, you know, I hadn't slept. I was very nerve wracked. And while I was waiting for the plane, that's when it just kind of I was obviously choosing the ego as my teacher because I was not feeling very, very protected and
peaceful.
Safe, very peaceful. And as anyone who's worked with this course for any time knows, when you've chosen the ego, like then everything's wrong, you know? And so that's, you know, so that's when I got really sad about my father-in-law and really guilty that I hadn't been there. And then really sad that my daughter wasn't coming back. And you know what I mean? It just sort of all kind of became, and then really dwelling on what had happened in Orlando and just, you know, just anxious and not grounded and literally. And that's when I just kind of said, you know, I want the peace of God. I mean, I sat down in the airport in Seattle and turned to this lesson it's a lesson that I've always loved. And I also turned to, lesson 200, which is the final lesson in the workbook, which is there is no peace except the peace of God. And the two really go hand in hand. I don't think it's any mistake that there is no peace except the peace of God is the final lesson in the first part of the workbook, which is all about the undoing of guilt and which involves the looking at how we don't want peace, you know, and really that moment to moment, you know, kind of what I was talking about while I was in Seattle of looking at what's, you know, my feelings and questioning their validity and their cause. I mean, what's really going on here? What am I really saying when I'm feeling this? And so, you know, I went first to lesson 200, which is, you know, there is no peace except the peace of God. And that's really the way I was feeling at that moment. It's just like, you know, there's just one damn thing after another here in the dream. and you know, it, I mean, that's always the case. And there just cannot be stability in a place in a dualistic imaginary world that was literally imagined and projected as a defense against the you know, invulnerable, you know, and abstract, undifferentiated union of love in the mind. And so, you know, the belief that we could create a different world, a different self, the price of believing that, the guilt over believing that, was such that we had to have a world, you know, in which there was pain. I mean, there's that other lesson in the workbook that says, you know, if pain is real, there is no God, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so pain has to be real here in the world. And the more we really, you know, we may be very good at denying it, in our lives, but as course students, eventually we've got to really begin to make the connection between the choice that we're making in the mind to make separation real and the pain that we're feeling, you know, because the forms out there are always going to be in conflict. And, you know, as long as we're seeking for peace and love, as I was saying, substitutes for real love in the world, you know, we really are not going to be able to find the peace of God. And we have to see, though, that we really still want that. You know, we don't know anymore that real love exists. We really believe at a deep level that we destroyed real love and are not aware that we deliberately fell asleep, deliberately forgot, that this is only a dream, you know? So anyway, it's really the awareness that nothing here will work, that there is no peace except the peace of God, you know, that's what this practice is. Jesus as our teacher is getting us to, and we don't do it all at once, but, you know, one illusion at a time, working with this day to day in the classroom of our lives and looking at the cost of what we're doing, of where we're placing our investment, how we're trying to manipulate and bargain for love with others, and how we're trying to seek for love where it cannot be found, you know, trying to drag Jesus into a world that is not loving and make it a better world, you know, which is really just another way of turning our backs on love. It's just never going to work. And the Course tells us that over and over and over again. And, you know, if we're paying attention, we see the results of it all over the place, not just in our personal lives, but certainly in the collective. And, you know, the ultimate, result of that, of our choice to believe in separation, which is to choose the teacher of separation in the mind, the ego thought system, is always going to ultimately result in, the Course says, murder. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't mince words. It's miracles or murder. And of course, the miracle is just the changing, going back to the decision-making mind and changing my mind, you know, choosing a different teacher and choosing to make the purpose of my life now a classroom in which I can learn gently to awaken from this dream and to be, and to change my mind about my feelings of victimization. And, you know, so that I can at least reflect during that process of changing my mind, reflect the love that we truly are within my relationships. I can learn to do that as I change my mind, you know, and that's how I discovered that no one is really guilty here, including me. But until I'm willing to do that, I will always walk around with a sense of feeling unloved and unloving, or fearful that I will be about to lose whatever I hold dear, and for good reason, because that's exactly how the whole thing is set up. Eventually, we will all lose whatever we hold dear here. You know, it's a lie that anything here can get at that lack that we feel within, that is the reason that we try so hard to, you know, constantly seek for something to fill us up in the world. And of course, there's just not enough of anything to even put a dent in, you know, in that sense of lack. So anyway, maybe does that make any sense to you, or?
And, you know, absolutely it is. And I mean, what I was resonating with is what you said you know, earlier, he doesn't mince words, because that's one thing I kind of thought of lesson 185. You know, it starts from, you know, from the very, very first sentence, yeah, to say these words is nothing. Yeah. But to mean these words is everything. And of course, exactly with, and I'm thinking more globally, but what's going on right now, but even in my personal life, some things going on, you know, you just want to go quit saying it, start doing something, you know, right. To say these words is nothing, but to mean these words is everything. And then in the next paragraph, the other thing, talk about mincing words that I love, because this is like what just kind of hits you right in between the eyes, is he said, he cannot play with dreams, meaning all of us. Right. And I thought, if that isn't the truth, you know, we always say we want something. And he goes, but you can't play with dreams. If you say you want the peace of God, then you've got to stop playing with these dreams.
Right.
Period.
Nor think he is himself a dream, that sentence.
Yes.
Well, we think we are these personal selves. So, you know, until we're willing, again, until the pain threshold, you know, I heard Ken Wapnick talking recently on some CD set, and there was a question about the pain, you know, and the role of pain in forgiveness and in healing. And you know, it's almost like the course, he said something to the effect of, it's almost like the course is lowering our pain threshold. You know, because our tolerance for pain is very, very great. We're not paying attention to it. We're always attributing it to something outside ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the course is getting us more and more to associate, you know, to own the choice that we're making in the mind. I mean, that's how we learn we are a mind. By, you know, first we have to say, I'm wrong about what I think the cause of this pain is. And you know, because that is playing with dreams, you know? I'm wanting Jesus. I first decide what the problem is. You know, the problem is that I'm upset about my daughter moving away, or the problem is that there's, you know, too many guns. I mean that is a problem in form, but you know, what is the problem in the mind as well? You know, and we have to come up with, we have to bring it inside, it within our mind, and bring it to our teacher and say, you know what, if I believe that I am here and I believe that I'm in the dream and I don't know that I'm dreaming, then I'm wrong about everything. You know, that is all of that comes from the belief in separation, all of it. There are no exceptions to that. And the only thing that can be fixed is the belief in separation in the mind. You know, the goal of the course is to awaken from the dream. It's not to make a better dream, you know? And I mean, that doesn't even really make sense when you understand what the course is saying about the nature of reality, you know, because I mean, their dreams are not real, you know, it likens to the idea of the dreams that we have at night and that have their own internal logic, but they're still not real. And when we awaken, we know that, and we know we don't really want to stay in a dream, you know, that would be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, you know, if we knew that we were totally loved and loving, and that there was absolutely, it was impossible to have ever had anything opposite to that. If we really, really knew that, we wouldn't be so madly trying to defend a dream. You know, we don't know that. And we have to first resign as our own teacher. We have to say, you know what? I my weight isn't working. I don't know the answer. And that opens up, you know, that opens us back to, takes us back to the decision-making mind, and at least opens us to another way, to an answer, you know?
Yes.
But until we're willing to do that, we're just playing around with dreams. And mm-hmm. You know, let's just turn to lesson 200 for a second.
Okay.
Because that, I think, again, is that, you know, we have to come to accept that there is no peace except the peace of God. And that takes a lot of practice and a lot of looking at our own, you know, our own desire for misery. Because if we're experiencing misery, it's everything outside is an outward picture of an inner condition. You know, it's because we want to experience it, because the sense of guilt within us is so great. I mean, it's unconscious. Or, you know, I mean, not completely. There's a little bit of awareness that there's the nagging guilt. We just don't know what the cause of it is. But, you know, as long as we're trying to constantly prove that I exist separately from God, which is a lie, and it's not my fault, it's someone else's. That's my strategy for making it, you know, manageable, the guilt, and making myself feel that at least, you know, at least the punishment should go to someone that's even more guilty than I am. You know, all I can do is try to establish a relative innocence within a completely guilty system. You know, as long as I don't make the association that there's nothing but pain here from that belief, then I'm not gonna be ready to accept, you know, to really say and mean, I want the peace of God. You know, I mean, that's why we don't mean it, because we think, you know, we really think that our only hope is in the world. And so the Course is really getting us to look at that. How, why, you know, do you really think there's hope in the world? Look at the world around you. And it's constantly doing that. And so there's some places here. Well, the very first paragraph, seek you no further. You will not find peace except the peace of God. Accept this fact and save yourself the agony of yet more bitter disappointments, bleak despair, and sense of icy hopelessness and doubt. Seek you no further. There is nothing else for you to find except the peace of God, unless you seek for misery and pain.
I wish he wouldn't sugarcoat it like that. Oh my God. I love those.
The chat room doors just like slammed in our faces, right? Yeah, really. Sorry, guys. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, really.
It's one thing that I'm really not making up. Everything else we're making up. But,
yeah,
you know, I mean, and the Course doesn't leave us there. You know, there is hope beyond this, but it is a path of confronting just what the ego is up to, you know, and we have to, the hope of A Course in Miracles is getting us to see that we are not these bodies and these brains navigating this dream world. You know, we're a decision-making mind that has, the body actually is a dream in the decision-making mind. And we have two parts. We have a split mind. We have two parts of that mind. And you know, that we have the power to choose the ego, which is the thought system of the world and will always end in bleak despair, as he's saying. I mean, it just doesn't really... The stories in the world don't end anywhere else. Nobody gets out of here alive.
Yeah.
but we're not bodies. And so we're going to be led to that awareness through this practice. But we have to begin to, what motivates us is beginning to be sensitive to the pain this is causing us. And you know, and the pain of that sense of feeling unloved and unloving within. Which we have to become aware of. You know, that's how we become motivated to choose a different teacher, to choose another way. And so the Course will not leave us there, but you know, it is the point that we all must reach, that to come to the realization that there's no peace here. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, several paragraphs down in this lesson, I love this. It starts out with, come home. Mm-hmm. You have not found your happiness in foreign places and in alien forms that have no meaning to you, though you sought to make them meaningful. This world is not where you belong. You are a stranger here.
Right, right. Which kind of echoes lesson 182. Be still an instant and come. Is that? Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it is. It's 182, be still an instant and come home.
I got to look up the exact title. I'm just sort of blanking on it. I know that's the gist of it. But lesson 182 is that one with the beautiful, about the inner child, basically.
Uh-huh.
I will be still an instant and go home.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, it has that same language about the child, you know, this child within, and I'm just going to go quickly to that. We speak today for everyone who walks this world, for he is not at home. He goes uncertainly about it, endless search, seeking in darkness what he cannot find, not recognizing what it is he seeks. A thousand homes he makes, yet none contents his restless mind. And, you know, so there's all that language in it, and it talks about this frightened child that, you know, believes that, again, that he can never return to his father's home. You know, what I did to God was real, and I'll never be welcome home. And the desolation that everybody seemingly walking around here is carrying, that secret belief, you know. So no wonder we're seeing such carnage in the world, you know. And whether we're whether that's happening, you know, on a in a seemingly catastrophic way, or whether it's in a very quietly passive aggressive way within our own mind, in our anger at each other, it's still manifesting. You know, it's still a defense against that belief that we can never find our way home. What we did to God was real. So, you know, as soon as we accepted and believed that, and it was only a belief, but everything else that follows we're wrong about. But we're acting as if we're right about it. You know, we're acting as if we have to defend ourselves like this. And so the Course is saying, you know, first you have to come back. You're not even what you think you are. You're not even right about that. You know, you're a mind and you're not a body. And you can't teach yourself that there's a part of your mind that is a lucid dreamer. There's a part of your mind that does know that love still exists universally within and for all of us. There's a part of us that does see, you know, only calls for love in all of the, you know, and sees victims and victimizers as, you know, outside pictures of that same thought system of duality in the mind that was born of the belief that we destroyed love, that we threw God's love away. And this is the price that we all have to pay, you know. And mm-hmm. It's a lie. It's a lie. I mean, that's the good news. But we have to learn that one feeling of anger, one feeling of defensiveness, one feeling of unfair treatment, one judgment of another at a time. And that's what we're challenged to do. And as you know, we're challenged, you know, Jesus is asking us to try to take his hand throughout this process and to just look with him and to just question the validity of our, you know, our conclusions, our reactions, our judgments, and to just question the cause, you know, at least entertain the possibility that maybe I'm wrong about what all of this means. And really, maybe I can change the purpose of what I'm perceiving to learning that I'm not a body, that I'm not a vulnerable body, but an invulnerable, loving to all mind. Because this world in which we are pointing fingers at everybody outside there, and then also bashing ourselves because we inevitably feel guilty about doing that. You know, that's not fun. That's not a good world. There is no peace here.
No.
And he's not asking us to leave the world. I mean, this isn't about not doing, that's the beauty too of the Course. It's so practical. We don't have to give up our special relationships. It's very normal to miss our kids or, you know, he's not saying don't get angry. He's, you know, of course we're going to get angry if we believe we're bodies again, because we'll ultimately believe that we're a stranger here and can never find our way home. We'll feel like lost and, you know, abandoned. And everybody feels that way. But he's saying we can change the purpose of our lives to a classroom in which we really learn, you know, moment to moment by questioning our reaction to whatever's sort of in our face at the moment that we're wrong, you know? I mean, that's the idea of being happily wrong. You know, the happy learner that the Course talks about. I'm not you know, I'm wrong about what I think. I'd rather be, you know, there's that question in the Course, would you rather be right or happy? And, you know, the truth is that we'd rather be right, you know?
Right.
Because that we think that is happiness, but it's not, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to read one of the paragraphs from lesson 200. It says, yet you can ask as easily for love, for happiness, and for eternal life and peace that has no ending. Ask for this and you can only win. To ask for what you already must, to ask for what you have already must succeed. And to ask that what is false be true can only fail. Forgive yourself for vain imaginings and seek no longer what you cannot find. For what could be more foolish than to seek and seek and seek again for hell when you have but to look with open eyes to find that heaven lies before you through a door that opens easily to welcome you?
Right.
And see, that's the hope that you're talking about. And it is paragraphs like this where all of a sudden I find myself just breathing easy because, you know, it's the reiteration that you didn't lose anything. So to ask for what you already have, which is love, which is hope, which is eternal peace, that's got to succeed because you already have that.
Right.
You're the one hitting your head against the wall saying, I want what is false to be true.
Right.
And that is never, ever going to happen.
Right. And it's just insane to want it to happen. You know, I mean, we've forgotten, you know, it all stemmed from that belief. But as you're saying, the end is sure. This was all solved. You know, ideas did not leave their source. We haven't left our Father's arms. That seamless union of eternal love in heaven is intact. You know, even as we go about this wild dreaming. And so, I mean, but the beauty of this practice is that by looking with, what did he say, open eyes, when you have but to look with open eyes to find that heaven lies before you, well, I mean, that means we have to look with Jesus. We have to ask for help because we think, we're looking with the body's eyes. And the body's eyes, we're told over and over in the Course, see nothing. You know, the body's ears don't hear. I mean, that all of the body's senses were, you know, programmed by the mind to give feedback to make the dream real, you know, to strengthen our belief that the dream is real and keep us mindless and keep us seeking outside the mind. And so the only hope is to step back with Jesus to the mind, step back to the mind and, you know, join Jesus there and bring all of these dark, wild imaginings to look upon with eyes that can truly see, with his true vision. And, you know, in paragraph 5, it says, freedom is given you where you be held but chains and iron doors, but you must change your mind about the purpose of the world if you would find escape. And so we want to, right now, the world, we believe that we're imprisoned in the world. And so, you know, we're fighting to try to find, to just get our share of some kind of substitute. And, you know, because we're in a mortal place and, you know, to bargain, to get our needs met and to, again, try to, you know, ingest basically, both, you know, substances and the company of others to try to fill this lack we feel within and then to lash out, you know, to constantly lash out when we feel, because we feel completely attacked all the time and unfairly treated. And that justifies our victimizing others. And then we love to play the face of innocence and we love to surround ourselves with victimizers so that we can feel more innocent. You know, there's just no way out of doing some form of that. You know, if we are identified with the body and if we are trying to do this without going back to the mind and without taking Jesus's hand to help us. So we're trying to change the purpose of our world from a prison, basically, of the ego thought system that we've chosen and then forgot we chose, to a classroom in which we, you know, in which we take small steps through looking with Jesus at illusions as they arise to awaken from the dream. So he says, but you must change your mind about the purpose of the world if you would find escape. You will be bound till all the world is seen by you as blessed and everyone made free of your mistakes and honored as he is. And, you know, that means, again, we have to look on all that we think the problem is, all of the, you know, the ones that we're pointing a finger at until we can see that they're just, it's the same call for love, that they have the same split mind I do. And of course they're feeling unloved and unloving. And of course they're acting out of fear. We all do it. I do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and in that sentence, I think that's like one of those, what I'd call a mind twister. if you read it carefully, I mean, unless I'm reading too much into it, when it says, you will be bound till all the world is seen by you as blessed and everyone made free of your mistakes and honored as he is, which just lets you know it's your perception of that person.
Right.
You know, it's all this projection, you know. And when you can let them free of your mistakes and honor them as they are, then you see that you're free too.
That's the Course's formula, is that, you know, you see the face of Christ in your brother and remember God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you know, the you again that Jesus is always addressing is not the personal self that we think is reading this book. The you is the decision-making mind. And, you know, we're all a fragment of that decision-making mind. So he's really addressing us as minds. And this process of learning the Course and practicing the Course is leading us kind of without our awareness. back to, you know, it's going to eventually dawn on us that wow, you know, I mean, I must be something else, because everything shifts in that holy instant in which I do accept the vision of Jesus. I do see my brother as innocent, and I realize, you know, I have that experience internally of real innocence within myself. And that, you know, those glimpses that we get, which at the end of the journey in the real world will be all that's left, you know, that will be all we see. But that reassures us. Now we have something to contrast the horror really of the pain of judgment and, you know, what we're doing, this bargaining and this attack and defense cycle that never seems to end in this world, and this, you know, the guilt in our relationships and the aging of bodies and the, I mean, all of it, you know, it's very, very upsetting and destructive. And, you know, but we will be led to see that, you know, that holy instant is really all there is. It's that, you know, certainty of innocence and ability to only extend love. And, you know, we can reflect that even now within our dream through this practice and begin to see that, you know, I want that more and more, because the pain of the contrast of the pain of what I've been doing is going to at some point become so, you know, so ridiculously, I mean, it becomes more painful by contrast, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And so eventually, you know, Jesus says our tolerance for pain is high, but it's not, it isn't infinite.
Yes.
And I think if you're practicing this, you begin to really see that it's so painful when we're choosing to, I mean, it feels like solitary confinement when we are wanting to be right and making others wrong. I mean, it really does. It isn't, you know, it may have temporarily relieved our guilt before we really started, you know, practicing forgiveness. But now we see it never was a solution, and the guilt never went away. You know, it just was a temporary reprieve. And now it's like it shortens that gap. You don't even have the temporary reprieve. You just feel, you know, really yucky and really desolate when you're doing that, because you're judging. You must have judged yourself first. And so what I am accusing my brother of, not in form, but in content, the hatred that I'm accusing my brother of is what I feel about myself. And, you know, that's really painful.
It is. And actually what I was thinking, I was kind of getting stuck, but politically this week, there have been a couple of interesting things going on, because I'm not going to name names, but one politician said one thing, and then the other politician literally took every single one of those points and just turned it around and said the other one was doing it. And so, but there was a part of me that wanted to laugh, because it was almost like two children, you know, one saying, you did blah, blah, blah. And they go, no, you did it. You did it. No, you did it.
Well,
you know what I mean? And it was sort of like, am I really hearing this? Like, you know, it was almost like, you know, 2 8-year-olds. I mean, that's what it sounded like.
Yes. And I mean, and we are, I mean, Jesus talks about us as
right,
you know, we're spoiled brats, you know, he doesn't judge us in those terms, but he says, you know, you're acting like children. You just don't, you know, you're having tantrums, you're having perceptual temper tantrums, and you want it your way. You know, we all want it our way. And the course gets us to really look at how, you know, to sort of see, look at, again, this practice of whenever I'm feeling something, you know, kind of pausing internally and saying, wait a minute, you know, if I'm experiencing this, I must have chosen this. You know, is that really the cause? Is it really in them, what I'm accusing them of? And just that process of doing that, you know, gets us to see how we're paying attention. We're becoming mindful to our thoughts and present to them. And it's not pretty. You know, we're all throwing constantly perceptual temper tantrums. That, I mean, I don't know if you remember, I'm dating myself here, but the early Saturday Night Live things with Dan Aykroyd and
Jane Curtin.
Wait, it was He Said, She Said, I think. It was like a version of that. And they would just call each other names, you know, they have political, she usually played like the liberal and he played the conservative, but they would just, you know, just bash each other and call each other names. Well, you know, I mean, that used to be sort of a parody. It's not a parody anymore.
No, yeah.
I mean, our tolerance for name calling has gotten really high, hasn't it?
Yeah, yes.
So, but the content of it, you know, even when people were being politically correct, they were still hating each other just as strongly, you know, internally. So it's all coming.
It's not too much different.
No, right? It's really not. I mean, in a way, it's you know, that it's becoming more overt like that is at least, you know, let's, like, we can really see it. And hopefully, you know, we use what's going on in the collective, including the, you know, the very contentious campaign that's already in process for president in the United States, you know, that we can use that and what we need to do when we find ourselves reacting to it and choosing sides, which we will do, we all do. Is going to have to be remembering that this, I'm looking at an outside picture of an inward condition, and this is the result of my split mind, because there's just one. We all are part of that decision-making mind. And so, you know, this, the practice is in healing my own mind, in seeing how I want to differentiate myself and distance myself from the candidate that I don't like, or, you know, to look at how I'm trying to say one is different than the other,
right?
Or one is better than the other or worse than the other. You know, everybody's scared here. Everybody's that frightened child. And this is the inevitable result. I have that within me too. And so, you know, we're really going to be challenged to use this. I mean, it's a great classroom that we have. And you know, we've got it, for another 5 months or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I heard an interesting statistic today, which it actually correlates, I think, astrologically. So I'm going to talk about it on my show next week when I'm talking astrology. But it was that a new poll is showing that whereas in the past when people, you know, sided one way or the other with Democrats, Republicans, or one candidate or another, they had a fairly high tolerance for people who didn't. And they said, at this point, people are all the more, they will describe people who don't agree with them or people on the other side as not just disagreeing with them, but they're dangerous people.
Yes, yes.
And I thought, you know, I would love to get a little more into that statistic, because it's so much that it's not just, okay, this is my preference. It's like, this is my preference. And if you don't like it, you're evil. Right. You know, you are really bad. It's not just that you prefer the other flavor, you know.
Right. Well, it's just become, you know, in our lifetimes, but I'm sure, I mean, I think in the whole history of humankind, it just becomes more and more polarized.
Right. That's a good word. Thank you. That's it.
and I mean, it does. It. But that's, the ego system is always trying to pull, you know, to be, it just becomes more complicated and larger and more bodies and more, you know, more ways to make differences real and more finger pointing and the hatred just escalates, because if it isn't getting looked at and undone, it's just going to grow, you know, and the fear just grows more and more too. And you can see the fear is everywhere now. You know, but it's always been there. It just gets more and more. And so, but you're absolutely right. Like, you know, Democrats or Republicans, it used to be able to be civil with one another.
Yeah.
you know, and you would like, I mean, you would be able to have dinner with people from, you know, that were not, did not agree with you. I mean, I still do, but I, you know, it seems more and more that that's something where people don't even want to associate or talk to each other, you know?
Right.
And it gets heated so quickly, any kind of dialogue, that you just avoid it, you know?
Absolutely.
You either avoid it, or if some people really who enjoy getting into the thick of it, but you know, it's passive aggressive is probably avoiding it, and jumping into the fray is probably, you know, it doesn't matter. It's what's the mind doing, you know? Because if I'm being judgmental and hateful in my mind, even if I'm not letting it rip at someone, that's what I work with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and looking, I was just looking at the time and realizing we've got to end on a positive note.
Not that
maybe a positive note is any better than any other note, because it's all part of the illusion.
Well, let's go find some positive.
But I thought, you know, I just want to kind of, before we go into announcements, I'd say, you know, here again in lesson 200, I love this. Peace is the bridge that everyone will cross to leave this world behind. Peace is the answer to conflicting goals, to senseless journeys, frantic vain pursuits, and meaningless endeavors. Now the way is easy, sloping gently towards the bridge where freedom lies within the peace of God. So as we, you know, go through this week and we're examining those frustrations and we're examining those angers and all that stuff coming up, to just kind of remember that it kind of goes back to, why wait for heaven? Peace is the bridge that eventually we will all cross. So what does peace mean to us? Can we get there a little bit faster? You know, that's what I'd encourage people to kind of ask themselves this week.
Well, and we can do it, you know, right now. It's in changing my mind right now about what I think you're, you know, about my brother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really the core of A Course in Miracles, and which means that I, you know, I will be healing the conflict in my own mind when I do that. And it's the only way that I'll experience myself, you know, once I see that it's, I have the same fear and split mind as this person, I can, you know, I'm inviting in the remembrance of our innocence. And that's how I access it too. Mm-hmm. And that's what we all want.
Okay. Well, thank you, Susan. And thank you so much for bringing up these lessons and really being able to share of your own story and what's going on for you. Do you have any announcements before we close the show today?
No, I don't think so. I just would mention again, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is doing amazing streamed classes, as well as, you know, you can go to Temecula and be there live. But if you want to sign up to see these classes and attend these classes online, I can't recommend them more highly. They seem to get better and better and deeper. And I just watched the June one, which was about being right or happy. And it was absolutely amazing and, you know, really gave you practical, helpful in your daily practice stuff to work with. So I would, you know, encourage everyone. They may not be having one in July, but there are some upcoming ones that you can sign up for, and I think they'll soon be putting out a fall schedule. So that's the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and you can go to their Temecula schedule page and find their classes there.
Okay, and I'll post that in the chat room, and it's www.facim.org. And also, you can find Susan on her site, which is www.foraysinforgiveness.com, and that's Forays. So foraysinforgiveness, all one word, .com. And Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, CA.
Okay, and everybody, the listeners, thanks for being here. And those of you who are in the chat room, thanks for not leaving when we got a little out of control there. And thanks to thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And I would remind you that next week we are going to be 2 hours later. We're going to be in that 10 a.m. Pacific time slot. So I hope that you will meet me there and kind of, just get into the groove. We've got some new people joining us on Fridays. But Kathleen Peterson will follow me. And then we're going to have some new people up in that lineup. And so go to 12radio.com and check out all of the new schedules. So everybody, until next week, I hope you will relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest Susan Dugan on 12radio, where we are changing the way you think about peace. Alexa, play 12 Radio on TuneIn.
12 Radio on TuneIn. Finally, something great to listen to.
Hey, you're listening to 12 Radio. That makes you very special in our book. Thank you. Sit back, relax, let us entertain you.
Aw, that's so much better. Thanks, Alexa. You can now listen to 12 Radio by asking Alexa to find 12 Radio on TuneIn.
12 Radio, changing the way we listen to the world.